In today's episode, we're going to talk about, can you be hypersensitive to estrogen? I'm Dr. Valerie from Progress Your Health.
And I'm Dr. Maggie from Progress Your Health. So this was a question that we received on our website. We have a little tab there that says Ask a Doctor, and Carrie submitted the question, so we figured it would be a good one to discuss. We haven't actually done too many of these in a little while, so.
And we've actually gotten a few questions. There's another one we might do another podcast on where people are talking about their sensitivity to HRT, so we thought we might address some.
Well, for doing this as long as we have, there's this gamut, this wide variant of the individuality, and I think this is an example of some women can tolerate a whole bunch, some women can tolerate very little, so why don't you go ahead and read Carrie's question.
Funny, you spelled Carrie, K-E-R-R-Y, because we change everybody's names, and I spelled it K-A-R-I.
Same way.
I know.
Same way.
Potato, potato. All right, so this one from Carrie. Question, I used to be on biased 80-20 for 3 years and suddenly stopped absorbing. I'm not sure why, but I do know I didn't always use it the same time every day. From the moment I went on hormone therapy, I've had body pain and thought I had fibromyalgia. When my estrogen dropped due to the absorption issue, I realized my body pain went completely away. I then went on the patch because my doc said we could change the method. Immediately, my body pain was back and even worse, terrible. I was on 0.025 patch, and then after raising it to 0.05, it got really bad. I think I may ask to go back on the compounded cream again, maybe change the site that I apply it to and be more consistent. I'm very frustrated because nobody talks about a subset of people that are very sensitive to estrogen. They only talk about making the joint pain go away. Do you think I should use a 90-10 ratio instead? What would you recommend that I do? I'm so sad and frustrated.
Well, there's a lot to unpack on that one. She gave us right at the top, she gave us the 80-20 for 3 years. She gave us the ratio, but she did not give us the milligram amount. So if she went from an 80-20 ratio without knowing exactly what the milligram is, we could assume that it's probably less than 3 milligrams. That seems like the trend that we usually get 1 to 2 milligrams. And then she went from there to the patch. So what are your first impressions of her question?
Well, I'm sad that she's sad and frustrated. I can totally understand that. Yeah. And she's tried all these different estrogens, it sounds like. So whether it's 80-20, whatever dose, she's having body pain. And so I definitely think that she is sensitive to estrogen, but there's so many, like you said, there's a little bit of some components to unpack with that, because I've dealt with a lot of patients that are really sensitive, and that is always the reason why you go very low, very slow, and then work your way up. It's much easier to start with I've started with like micro, such small amounts with some patients that were really sensitive. And then we just work our way up rather than doing too much of a good thing. And then you got to back out of these negative consequences or side effects. Because I do think for Carrie, it probably is a little bit more about, like I said, going low and slow for her.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. And I do think that when a woman's in menopause and you're introducing the hormones, there is a acclimation process. And you see that a lot when we do rhythmic dosing, because you're giving women a really good dose. And you do have to be, there's going to be a little bit of an adjustment period. So for the ones that are even more sensitive than that, it's going to take a while for their estrogen receptors to sort of acclimate to the presence of that new hormone.
I do know when you add, so you think about being in menopause, when you add in estrogen, sometimes it'll actually stimulate that central nervous system to make your pain tolerance, I don't know how the word would be, so it makes you more sensitive to pain. So that could be happening here with Carrie if she hadn't been on the hormones for a while or just starting them, or maybe it was a little too high for her because everybody is such an individual. We all are different. Is that might have just made her pain go up, and you just needed to, I don't want to say have her grin and bear it, because you never want to do that or just like deal with it, is maybe back off a little bit and just finesse it. Because we've always talked about HRT isn't just, slap a patch on and take some progesterone at night. It really is about finding the right dose for the right person and also what their goals are. So I think there's probably a little bit where she is sensitive. Maybe her nervous system is a little more sensitive than other people. So that lowered her, made her more sensitive to the pain. And then you think about estrogen too. Estrogen likes to hold on to water. When you're going from no estrogen to estrogen, that can cause, a lot of women will experience like a little breast puffiness, a little just puffiness in general. It takes a while for that to go away. perhaps in Carrie's case, which I've seen in other patients, is that sort of influx of water can go to the joints because we have receptors for estrogen in all our tendons, all our joints, you know, all our muscle receptors everywhere in our body, that it might have just created a little bit more inflammation.
Sure. Yeah. Now, what do you think of now the patch? We've seen these kind of issues with the patch more often than not. So she had no pain with the cream for 3 years. Then,
well, it looked like she did have pain. She said, from the moment I went on hormone therapy, I had body pain, just thought I had fibromyalgia, which is terrible. Fibromyalgia is not fun to deal with. So it looks like maybe for 3 years, her body didn't get used to it, that maybe the dose was too high or you needed to finesse it, or maybe do, like we had always talked about, the rhythmic dosing.
Yeah. Now you think there's someone that's sensitive and now you, you know, consider rhythmic dosing, because now the dose is going to be substantially higher than the patch or, a bias, but at the same time, estrogen sort of is what makes a woman a woman. So you sort of lean into that a little bit, right? You sort of go with it and usually you end up with a, you know, it seems contradictory, almost like counterintuitive to go that direction from a rhythmic dosing perspective. But more often than not, that's usually the right direction to go. I'm not saying in her case it's the right way to go, but I'm saying in general terms, you go with it as opposed to shying away from it.
Yeah, like building up to it, because I do feel the beauty to rhythmic dosing is because you're changing the doses. So sure, some of the estrogen doses can go real high, especially on day 12, but you're not keeping it that way like it is on a static dose. And I will say, and I'm going to say this very confidently, is if you think you're sensitive to estrogen, don't go on the patch.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Especially if you're already having some body pain issues, because like she said, she went from the 0.025 to the 0.05 and the pain got worse. Now, again, you'd see that. You'd certainly, you know, intuitively, you'd think you want to back off from that. And I'm not saying that raising the dose is the right thing for her. We don't really have enough information. What do you think about the her body stopped absorbing the cream? What do you think where that comes from?
It could be whether she changed compounding pharmacies. There's fillers, there's binders, there's excipients, there's all, you know, for females, I find that our skin is pretty thin, that we're going to absorb the cream pretty well.
But more than likely, but if they're saying that they stopped absorbing, usually there's a change in blood work that would determine
that. That's what
that.
I'm thinking, is probably the blood work showed up, that it looked low. And I know a lot of people chase the blood work. Oh, my levels went down, we have to raise the dose. Oh, my levels went up, we have to reduce it. Really goes by how they're feeling. And then use the blood work as a way to kind of keep them safe, you know, make sure the numbers are in good parameters. So I'm not, I haven't, to be honest, in 20 years, I haven't had anybody have any problems with not absorbing their hormone cream. Right. Now we've changed doses a lot. Life changes, people get older, seasons change, people move to different climates. You have to change, you know, the dosage, absolutely. Mm-hmm. But I wouldn't say that it just like her body just rejected it.
Yeah, now depending on what her, because she gives the ratio 80-20, but no milligram amount, so we don't know what the dosage is. The dosage is going to determine the blood work. If she's on, let's say, 2 milligrams, her estradiol level on blood work is not going to go up very much, right? It's going to look relatively, almost like she's not even taking any hormone. You're not going to get a substantial rise, and I think there's a little bit of misunderstanding about dosage. Now the patch, those types of things will raise your blood level, mm-hmm. right? That's why 0.025 and 0.05 is not, a hundredth of a milligram, right? Because those things, we see it quite often that those will actually raise your numbers quite easily, where the bias tends to not do that as easily as the patch does.
So those of you that are listening know exactly what we're talking about, but anybody that's new, so a bias is a combination of estriol E3 and estradiol E2. So an 80-20 biased means that there is 80% estriol to 20% estradiol. Now a patch, an estradiol patch, is just all estradiol. That's mm-hmm. what makes it so much stronger. And there's something different about it. Really is like apples and oranges when you're comparing a transdermal biased cream to an estradiol patch. They really are like completely two different things. But I will say, if you're going to be sensitive to estrogen, it's really the estradiol that you're sensitive. I think I can count on one hand, like two people that were sensitive to the estriol. They were in perimenopause, and eventually we kind of worked them into the estriol, mm-hmm. and then it helped a lot with their perimenopausal symptoms. But I have not run into many women that are like I said, are sensitive to estriol. So it's most definitely the estradiol. So I like that Carrie's thinking about it. So you think the 90-10 she's talking about, I want to maybe go back to the compounded cream. Should I switch to a 90-10, which means there would be more estriol, 90% estriol to 10% estradiol. And I think I like, you know, that's probably what I would have done. Just for example, I have a patient I'm thinking of, and she's in menopause. She's gorgeous. She's in her mid-50s. I've known her before she went into menopause, you know, prior to that. And she's really sensitive to the estradiol. I mean, so much that her breast size will grow like a cup and a half when we're on the 80-20. Mm-hmm. So we finally finessed it to, actually we do more of like an 80-20 in the morning and then a 90-10 at night. I want to say it's that, or it might be flipped. But we kind of had to really uniquely find a tailored dose for her. And it's different in the morning than it is in the evening to keep that breast tissue from growing. So, you know, people are really sensitive. Now, when we do her blood work, she feels great, but her blood work does look like the levels are low. So
just for argument's sake, what is her blood level number?
So what is it, nanogram per deciliter? So their estradiol level, it is pretty low. It's down there at 30. I think it's in the 30s.
Yeah, so it's still technically a menopausal number.
But she feels good. Yeah. You know, her bone density, we're doing some other aspects to work on her bone density with diet, nutrition, and lifestyle. And then we also have the hormones. But she just did not do well on an 80-20. But she, like I said, I think we have her on a little bit of 80-20 in the morning and then the 90-10 at night. And we find that. Finesse that, and probably next year we may end up changing it because everybody changes. So that's what I'm thinking with Carrie. It's not that she suddenly stopped absorbing it. I think there was something probably that showed up in the blood work, and they maybe the fillers or binders or something happened there. But I wouldn't say that her, like I said, her body rejected it.
But it's still the 80-20 or the 90-10, a lot of that still determines on what the milligram amount is.
Actual dosage, yeah. 90-10 of 10 milligrams of biased is different than a 1 milligram.
Yeah, yeah.
So you're right that there is, you know, dose dependent.
Patient story, I have another one that was fairly similar. One patient came to me, we decided to do rhythmic dosing, patient's choice. Sent another friend of hers, referred a friend of hers, was also thinking about rhythmic dosing. And then we got to talking about what she was currently doing. And she was on a very small dose and said that it gave, just like what you're saying, it actually gave her quite a bit of breast tenderness. I'm like, we're not going to go rhythmic dosing if you're on such a small amount and you're having that much of a response, because it just wouldn't be comfortable for her, right? You know, it would just be... it would just be a bad idea. She'd be one of those failures because it's just too much for a woman that's never going to probably be able to tolerate that. So, you know, it's sort of a similar thing. You get these cues, and that sort of helps you determine, you know, where you're supposed to be. So, I really, really would like to know what her milligram amount is.
I know you do. So maybe, Carrie, if you're listening to this, write us what your milligrams were on the dosages you are, because I know you want to know about that.
It really doesn't matter because she's sensitive anyways. You and I usually have a starting point. And as you said earlier, you're always starting low, and then it can just gradually increase, you know, and that is, that way you know that if you're using almost an amount that there's no impact or there's no effect, then you know that you can just start keep increasing from there. If you start on a dose that's sort of just randomly picked, and it's too much, you don't, now granted you have to go down, but you don't know what you're going down to. You're still sort of in that, guessing game sort of, process.
Now, and you know, Carrie, let's kind of step back a little bit. So anybody else that maybe has started HRT, started some biased or something that has some estradiol in it, and you're noticing right off the bat starting it, oh, I don't feel good. You know, I have some pain. It doesn't mean just stop it. It means you probably need to back off, start low, and let your body get used to it. So Carrie had pain for 3 years. She might be truly sensitive to the estradiol. So maybe we do, like she said, 90-10 or even with the ratios, you can do anything you want. You don't have to do 80-20 or 90-10. You can do a particular estradiol to a particular estriol. You don't have to have these ratios. So it might be that she just needs a whole lot more estriol, and then this the barest amount of estradiol. So that's Carrie being sensitive to estrogen. But other women just starting HRT might mistake themselves for being extra sensitive to estrogen because they immediately have some symptoms. But it really just means let's dial it back, and wait and go real slow, go, you know, low and slow. And if you still are sensitive, then you could be like Carrie, and then we need to do, you know, something else. Because I do think, like you were saying, the body takes some time to sort of get adjusted to it.
Yeah. And you're really, you know, communicating when you're taking an exogenous hormone like that, especially for a woman that's in menopause, her body's not making any more estrogen. So depending on how long it has been since she's had hormone, now granted, she's had 3 years of biased exposure, a period of time of the patch exposure. So her body is at least used to some of that. You know, now, when you say you have a negative response right off the bat, how often, just as devil's advocate, how often where you see something where you actually lean into the discomfort or lean into the issue, or is it always going the other direction?
Well, I think it depends on the person. You're not going to have, if you have a 100% negative reaction, then yeah, you're going to back off. Like for me, example, you know, I'm 52. Yeah, I just turned 52 last week. I'm 52. And when I started hormones, you know, I will say I am sensitive to estrogen, that I had to go very low and work my way up. And I did get a lot of breast tenderness. I was like, kind of overfilling. And, but I felt really good. My brain felt really good. So I didn't want to take that away, because that was one of my biggest menopausal symptoms, was the cognitive component to it. So I didn't want that to go away, but the breast tenderness I didn't like. So I just stayed a little, so I kind of actually backed down, because I do the rhythmic dosing. I just did a really, like an extra low rhythmic dosing. And now it's been, I think I'm at month six now, is I can tolerate a higher dosing. Now I'm actually, I did some blood work, and I'm just like our patients. My blood work, but my estradiol level was a little low. I was like, it's a little low. I need to go up higher, but I also feel really good. So do I need to go up higher?
Well, see, that's a really interesting sort of balance there, because I told you from the beginning you should have raised it. But if I would have told you, if you would have followed what I told you to do, your breast tenderness probably would have been, what I would have expected is it would have been more intense, but it would have resolved quicker.
Well, it was not, so we have a newsletter. We just sent out the second episode, and I wrote on there about my menopause is when I started the hormones, I got sexy dreams, which was great. Like I said, the cognitive came back, sex on the brain, but then I got lumpy boobs. That was not fun. So no, I don't think I would have rather just like, let's push through
it. I didn't say push through it. I'm just saying that it would have, it more than likely it would, and we're speculating, so it doesn't really matter. You have a history of being sort of sensitive to estrogen, so you made the right choice by lowering that dose, you know, by all means. But you know, and that's where, you know, it's sort of hard to determine case by case. That's why you know, like you said, you just can't use three doses. There's a little bit of intuition there. There's a little bit of experience in there. It's kind of knowing where, you know, where that starting point should be, and then, you know, and then adjust accordingly.
Yeah. So that's where, like you were saying, you know, when you do the HRT, you might have some negative results, but it's not all negative. So like I was saying, did I say with that, you know, with the, you know, the sexy dreams and the lumpy boobs, that was the name of the article, is you, there's some good aspects and there wasn't some good aspects. So that's where that fine tuning comes in. So I do think for Carrie is doing some fine tuning.
Yeah.
I ended up doing a little bit of some, I was having too much caffeine and that'll cause lumpy boobs. So I backed off on the caffeine a little bit. There's some supplements you can take that can help with that. And then letting your body get used to it. There was one thing we had talked about earlier this morning, you know, talking about this podcast, is looking at the liver detoxification. Because there's, all hormones turn into metabolites, that it could be a little bit with those estrogen metabolites you want to try to get out of the system by working on the liver.
Yeah. And I know
you're the liver guy. You're good at that.
Oh, well, I think for someone who's sensitive, you could probably also ask some questions. They're probably sensitive to other things as well. They might be sensitive to caffeine. They might be sensitive to alcohol. They might be sensitive to other medications. It's not that they can tolerate mass amounts of everything and then they're sensitive just to estrogen. Usually it comes as almost like a profile. Every new patient, how do you tolerate caffeine and alcohol? And the ones that don't tolerate it very well, meaning that they get really jittery from a cup of coffee, or they get intoxicated really quickly, that gives you an idea that their liver's capacity for detoxification is a little genetically a little bit predisposed to being on the, I wouldn't say weaker side, but they just don't have, you know, some people can drink pots of coffee and tons of alcohol and, you know, they can still keep going, mm-hmm. right? But the ones that are sensitive, they know it, they avoid it, they don't go near it, because either they don't like the way it makes them feel, or they don't get the benefit of it that everybody else gets from those types of compounds or chemicals. And then those are the ones that tend to be in these situations that are also sensitive. So if you knew that on an intake, as you were talking to someone, and those couple of things come up, you'd be like, ah, you know, like that patient that was referred to me, you know, kind of like yours, you've known her for a while, so you knew she had some sensitivity going into dosing, right? Mm-hmm. You know, well, what areas was she sensitive? So you knew with her, you're going to take it very, very easy on the estrogen side. What else did you know about her?
I think the same thing. You know, she doesn't drink any caffeine. She does a lot of exercise, beautiful performer, very physical, athletic in her past.
So when you say athletic, do you mean just that she's athletic, or that and her build?
Her build, and I think when she was younger, she actually was an athlete dancer, professionally. That was
So athletic as a build then, so again, getting to the estrogen side, so that means that she was probably, how would you describe her build?
You know, slim, you know, tall, slim, but she did, you know, she'd always said she had, you know, bigger breasts, that she had had a reduction in the past when she was younger. She had a breast reduction. It just made her feel more comfortable. Yeah. It was easier for her to do her, you know, like I said, she was a professional dancer, so it was better for that. And then she noticed, you know, hey, going on these hormones, you know, I don't want to grow this back. I got rid of them for a reason, you know. So it was, you know, I knew she was already very sort of estrogen sensitive. Now, her periods in the past weren't so heavy, but she did have a little bit of some hyperproliferation, meaning the uterine lining was very sensitized by the estrogen. So I knew that, you know, we want to kind of tread slow. And even when I did do very low doses, she still grew some breast tissue that we had to sort of back down, and then it relaxed. And she had a little of the puffiness, the sensitive, actually had some, and all I think about it, had some sensitivity in the joints that we had to kind of work around. So like you said, when you have that intake, would never want to slap on an estradiol patch. She would have felt terrible.
That's sort of what I'm referring to, is that you already knew, and the athletic build, so she doesn't have, now granted, she might be the exception to a little bit, but slender body, not big breasted, not big in the hips. So that sort of tells you from an expression standpoint that her body is not producing a great amount of estrogen when she was still menstruating. Would you agree with that?
You know, you can go a couple different ways with that. I can see where you're going with that, that, you know, she may have been not making as much estrogen as a young female. Mm-hmm. So you don't want to over estrogenize someone because you don't know what their hormones were when they were back, you know, in their mid 20s. But then at the same time, like myself, you know, I've always been a bit more on the petite side, but I've had hyperproliferation of the uterus, polyps, endometriosis. I mean, things that you would think of as an estrogen dominant female.
Right.
So for me, that's why I had to start off low. But now that I've worked my way up on the hormones, I think I would, I do better with a little higher estrogen. I'm not quite there yet. Now that I got my blood drawn, it looks so low, but I feel good, as I may end up, because I'm my own experiment. I don't do that with patients, but I'm my own experiment. I may push that up, you know, on my next cycle here.
That's what I say you should have done. But I said,
you're always right.
No, not at all. According to a couple people, I'm like giving you a hard time and razzing you all the time.
We do read the comments, and most of the comments are so nice, and I'm so grateful to all the comments.
I'm just like over here hassling you whole time, not. You know, every episode. No, there's just a couple of comments about that. But, you know, I'm your biggest advocate. I'm not going to give you I'm not going to give you a hard time. All right. So, 90-10. I still want to know what the dosing is on that, but more than likely it's going to be pretty conservative just with her history. Is there anything else to add about that? We talked about liver, certainly things to support liver function. We didn't talk about how to support metabolites. So things like DIM,
3-endolcarbinol,
endo-3-carbinol,
cruciferous vegetables.
Yeah. Those things could be, it's not exactly a situation where you'd use them, that would be the most common. But again, if there is some sensitivity, and if they are producing the metabolites, which is not as easy to figure out, those metabolites.
You can do a Dutch test or urine test. That'll give you some of the metabolites, but I would say it wouldn't hurt. I mean, we could all eat more cruciferous vegetables. Sure. I know I certainly could.
Yeah. From a liver perspective, again, supporting liver function as much as you can. You have, sort of have two sides of liver detoxification. You have what they call phase one, phase two. Most Americans have an overactive phase one and an underactive phase two just because of the demand. Okay, so what you're trying to do there is you're trying to lower the burden on the phase one. That's why you limit your caffeine and alcohol and other dietary things, and you're allowing the phase two to sort of catch up. And so those, like you said, those metabolites, they go through phase one relatively, you know, easily, and they get stuck at the phase two, you know, kind of transition, and now liver function sort of slows down.
What's the difference between phase one and phase two? Why is there a phase one and phase two?
Well, phase one is this is a big 300 plus enzyme process called the cytochrome P450 system. That's phase one, and all medications, most medications, are going to be metabolized through that cytochrome, the phase one detoxification, the cytochrome P450 system. And then phase two is a series of like seven different, processes, methylation, sulfonification, there's a bunch of other ones. And you go from the phase one, let's say if we use caffeine as an example, right? Everyone's drinking coffee or tea or some energy drinks, or everyone's got caffeine. So your body actually turns the caffeine metabolite into a free radical from phase one into phase two. Mm-hmm. So your body, for whatever reason, you know, sort of does the similar thing with alcohol too. It turns it into a more toxic substance. Mm-hmm. Okay. Why the body, the liver does that, I'm not exactly sure.
Did you say it turns it into water soluble or?
No, that's the phase two.
Oh.
So phase one, it gets turned into a more noxious substance. Alcohol gets turned into acetaldehyde. Acetaldehyde is a poison to every cell in the body. Then it goes into phase two, and then that's where it gets turned into a water-soluble compound. Or you get excreted through the urine or the feces, you know, in the form of bile. Your body gets rid of all those things in bile. So that transition from those toxic substance, if your phase two is overburdened because of the demand, okay, a lot of medication, a lot of caffeine, a lot of alcohol.
Phase one is overburdened.
No, phase two is typically where the cog in the wheel is. Mm-hmm. So phase one, things are going quickly because of the demand, because our polluted
caffeine, medication,
our polluted world, you know, everything is, you know,
smells.
So phase one is just running along, and then it goes over to phase two, and that's where things come to a halt.
So how do you support phase two?
By reducing the burden on phase one. But there are some other things, you know, like, you know, this is really, when you say detox, you're not trying to, you know, make someone go to the bathroom a bunch, mm-hmm. you know, like they have to, you know, have, you know, 10 bowel movements a day. That's not really detoxing. This idea of improving phase one and phase two, everyone in the world could probably go through a spring cleaning, a fall cleaning, a winter cleaning, cleaning meaning that you're reducing that phase one burden and you're allowing phase two to sort of catch up and maintain that process. I would imagine, I haven't looked at some necessarily any data on that, but I bet you the women that are sensitive to estradiol like that probably have a little bit of a, I wouldn't say a defect, right? I don't think that there's an actual mutation there, like something you can diagnose. But like I said, just based on asking some simple questions, you get a sense where their phase one and phase two actually is. Okay, at least that's the way that I would look at it anyway. So they might use a little bit more NAC or milk thistle or other things that support that phase two. And now, you know, everything gets metabolized in a quicker fashion.
Oh, I love NAC, N-acetylcysteine.
Yeah. So that supports glutathione. That's there to, as a precursor to glutathione. We'll talk probably more about those things.
But that might be some options, like you said, in somebody that's having some sensitivity to estrogen.
Yeah.
Like
so supplementation, there's no medications you can use to improve liver function. Now a lot of it, as I said, is just reducing some of that burden. You know, the dietary burden and the lifestyle and the environmental burden, there are a lot of things we can do through supplementation that supports both speeding up or improving phase one and certainly enhancing and improving phase two. Okay, so that was a lot about liver. We didn't really.
Thanks for getting into that.
I didn't really expect to talk about that, but anything else to say about Carrie and her estrogen sensitivity?
No. I think this was a great. I learned some stuff from you about that liver stuff. That's awesome.
If you have any comments or questions, even if they're not so nice, you can put them down in the comments. If they're nice, that's great. We really appreciate that. Until next time, I'm Dr. Mackey.
And I'm Dr. Valerie.
Take care. Bye-bye.